informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Did you take joy watching Deshaun Watson stink yesterday? 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees, 713-780-3776. AR Platinum was distracted with his text. Hoping Deshaun sucks, has to retire, and is doing eugenics commercials in a year or two with Frank Thomas. Those commercials are hilarious. I'm surprised Frank Thomas does it. He must be getting paid really, really nice. Who else is it? Like Doug Flutie?
Doug Flutie.
Didn't they add somebody recently?
Andy Van Slyke was in
some
of them.
That's right. He was the random dude. I was like, what is...
Yeah.
Van Slyke still has name value?
Exactly.
His name resonates?
Yeah, I couldn't believe that when he was in a couple of them, but... Yeah, it's basically normally Big Frank and Doug Flutie.
Yeah, Doug Flutie. 6678, I enjoyed it so much. Us losing was disappointing. No, it wasn't. Us losing is good. Texans losing is good. But I don't want to steal your text here, 6878. I enjoyed it so much. Us losing was disappointed. But the Browns' offense not scoring at all was amazing. I hope the rest of his career is like that. 713-780-ESPN. I think with a good running game, he'll, Deshaun, be fine, especially if they run a lot of play action. Not that they run it, but I always thought he'd excel in a Gary Kubiak-style offense. I always thought that, too. I did see a couple plays where he held the ball too long, which plagued him in the past. He just needs time. He'll be fine. That's something that I noticed with him yesterday, too, is like he immediately got happy-footed, which was something that he did a lot but got better at. That's why I related that game to his rookie year, his first start, where he was very mediocre and then started to click, started to find a rhythm, started to be good. I don't know when Deshaun Watson's going to get back to that point, but I don't think that we've seen the last of Deshaun Watson playing his best football, his peak football, what we've seen in the past. I honestly have never seen a quarterback, or any athlete for that matter, that was away for the game for like a year or two that came back and wasn't good, unless it's some sort of injury thing like that. But anybody who's left the game minus an injury that changed their style has always come back well. The name I mentioned last week was Michael Jordan. I think Mike Vick is a good example because they were similar ages whenever they left the game. They left for a while. Mike Vick came back and was second in AP Player of the Year one year. You can even go back to like Ted Williams when he left baseball for war and came back and he was really good. I don't think that we've ever seen an athlete that left the sport for like a year or two and didn't have an injury that came back and was bad. So I still think Deshaun Watson's going to get back to that form. It might take a while. It might not be this year. It might even be next year. But ultimately, I believe Deshaun Watson will get back to being the old Deshaun Watson.
See, I don't question whether he's going to get back to being good again. I just don't know, because Michael Jordan came back. But I never saw Michael. There were certain aspects of Michael Jordan's game where I didn't think he ever got back to where he was pre-baseball.
Now maybe that, in terms of athleticism, but yeah, in terms of production.
Right, right. No, and I understand. And like you said, from a Vic perspective, I don't think for like long, like consistency for years and games and games and games, he was able to do that. But you're right. When he came back, there was a year where he was back to like his old self. I think from a Deshaun perspective, I think he'll be back to good again. I really question, and again, it's a flippant loose term now because top 10 used to really anoint you as one of the best in the game. This year, the top 10 quarterbacks in the league, as we thought they would be and how they've played out to be, aren't to, I would say it's more like seven or eight. But I don't really know if Deshaun Watson, and obviously I don't want him to, but I don't know if Deshaun Watson's going to get back to being a top 10-like quarterback in this league. You may be right. Obviously, maybe I might be too biased in hoping that he doesn't. But I really believe that it's going to take a while for him to try and regain that form.
4965 says, I said it many times, Deshaun was garbage when he played here. All of his numbers are during garbage time because nobody gave two S-words about us. They didn't have the game plan for the Texans or Deshaun Watson because it was easy with his passing title. His passing title was trash. Look, I think his passing title was trash. It came in his final year as the Texans whenever they won four games. Now, he had 2 years where they won 11 games, where they won 10 games, and he was playing very good football. I think that I've had this opinion, too, to that texter's point, that Deshaun Watson, I think, was slightly overrated. I didn't think Deshaun Watson was Pat Mahomes, Josh Allen, agreed, upper echelon, top quarterback. I feel that part of playing that position that's so important is that you don't have negative plays. And I felt Deshaun Watson made way too many negative plays. It might not have always shown up in turnovers, but how many times has Deshaun Watson been sacked in his life? A negative play. Didn't know when to get rid of the football, take the incompletion, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I think Deshaun Watson's top 10 good. I don't think he's top 5 good. So when I say slightly overrated, that's the pick. That's the little thing that I'm picking nits here because I think it's a very, very fine line. I think he's top 10. I don't think he's top 5.
Yeah, look, I think that you saw enough of the the measurables and the on-field, but you knew that there was work to do, right? You knew, like you said, that I always harped on. He hung on to the ball too long. He basically thought that it was all on his shoulders and he had to make the play himself as opposed to making the easier or smarter play by just dumping it down or accepting a two-yard loss instead of getting dumped for a 15-yard loss and basically putting yourself in an insurmountable set of downs and distance to where you would end up going to have to punt the football. But now it's a different set of circumstances. Now it's the mental, the physical, the distractions that you're going to face along the way too, because you're not only going to hear it in Houston, you were supposed to hear it a lot in Houston. But it's just like the Astros after the cheating scandal. You're going to get bombarded with this on the road, I believe. There's going to be plenty of people coming out of the woodwork to come at you on a week-to-week basis. It's a new set of obstacles that you're going to have to face. And I don't know, again, he got the money. He got comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm curious to see how long it takes him to snap out of this and how far he can get back to getting back, regaining his old form.
I feel confident he gets back there. I don't think it's this year. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. You need a theme song for our next caller, Brendan, that Take Me to Church song. Church, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Church?
Hey, how you guys doing today? Love the show.
Thank you.
Hey, Joel, specifically, it just sounds like Deshaun, like you just, you see, it sounds like you're a little butthurt that he left. And he got a bunch of money, and I just think you're way off. And also, he wasn't charged with anything criminal, and the Browns gave him a ton of money. I wish him all the best. Plus, I'm not a Texans fan to begin with, but...
Well, why do you wish him all the best, Church, if you know what he did to all those women, whether it was legal or illegal? He didn't get charged.
Do you know what he did, Joel? You know what he did?
Yeah, I've gotten enough from the articles, from a lot of the evidence, from a lot of the things that people have put out there and detailed with sources and other things that I don't even have to worry about just the victims and what they said enough to realize you can call it a fetish if you want to be on his side, Church. It seems like he went way further than that on multiple occasions and made a lot of people see a totally different Deshaun Watson.
Well, I think he made some poor decisions, but he wasn't charged with anything criminal, not a felon. And I think it was a money grab. I mean, that's my opinion. You're entitled to your opinion too, but I don't know. I don't wish the guy any bad luck. Plus, I'm not a Texans fan, and you know, whatever. More power to it.
Appreciate the call, Church. I think that's where you probably find the difference, and probably where you find the line. If you're not a Texans fan, then you probably don't care a whole lot about Deshaun and him stabbing his back on the franchise and the organization. You can live with that if you're not a Texans fan. Because Church's point about, you know, the sexual misconducts, alleged crimes, was no-billed criminally in two different counties, so I understand Church's point of view. And it's not a point of view that's specific only to Church. Other people have had this point of view as well, especially outside of the city of Houston, especially in the state of Ohio, especially Cleveland Browns fans, because it justifies it a little bit more. Now, I think where Houston Texans fans come into play, because look, there's some Texans fans that have the same opinion of Church. I think it's stupid. I think it's stupid to have that opinion about Deshaun Watson, but it's not unique. It is not exclusive to just one. It's more than just Church. But if you're a Texan fan, in my opinion, you should have disliked Deshaun Watson even before any of the sexual misconduct cases came out. The dude signed a contract with your organization. You had hopes that Deshaun Watson was going to win this city a Super Bowl. That thought existed. People in this city thought Deshaun Watson would lead the Texans and win a Super Bowl. And then all of a sudden, in less than a year after signing the extension, he is subtly tweeting on Twitter about wanting out. Like, didn't even, you know, people talk about the cojones to talk about it. Like, what is he doing on Twitter? These little subtle tweets, like it's kind of soft, et cetera, et cetera. There was already a certain percentage of people that disliked Deshaun Watson before we knew anything about the criminal allegations. The criminal allegations on top of it, and again, to Church's point, none of it got proven true. None of it was, he wasn't even charged criminally. No billed in two different counties, so you can understand that point of view. But best case scenario, the dude is a pervert that is, you know, does he have fetishes, things like that. He just makes it very difficult to root for. And you have this he said, she said battle going on. I think most people probably believe that there is an element of truth to all of it. Where there is smoke, there is fire.
It's also a combo platter, Jeremy, because it's a combination of the two things, whether you you know, you're just, you were a Watson fan before or not. He sold you a bill of goods, right? He sold you a bill of goods in the community that he was this great dude that wanted to make a difference and do all these things to change people's lives and be a positive influence in the city. And then he sold you a bill of goods that he loves H-Town and that he's a part of the H and he's a part of the organization and he wants to bring a Super Bowl to Houston. And then you saw that he was absolutely playing you the entire way on both fronts and you saw a totally different person. That should change your opinion. And I'll give Donna for credit for this, as I was also thinking about it when he said it. If Church is a father of daughters and he has daughters, I think his opinion's totally different.
Look, completely agree. There's no doubt about that. But his opinion's also different if he's a Texans fan. And that if you support the Houston Texans and you have a dude that's your franchise quarterback that, like, let's eliminate the sexual misconduct from this conversation, which is a very difficult thing to do because it's forever going to be part of the Deshaun Watson story for the rest of his life, whether he was charged criminally or not. That's always going to exist in the history of Deshaun Watson. But if you eliminate that, and Church said he wasn't a Texans fan, I think this is where it comes into play, because if you are a Texans fan, and I understand on December 5th, 2022, it's hard to show your face and say that at the same time, but if you are a Texans fan, this dude stabbed you in the back. So how are you going to pull for somebody that stabbed you in the back, even if you eliminate all the other stuff? Dat Boy Live, and we'll answer this on the other side, but I want to use this to tease our next segment, because I think that a lot of people are having this conversation. A lot of people responded to my tweet about this yesterday, too. Oh, Cal, you know, Hannah McNair turned his shoulder on Deshaun Watson. She should be turning her shoulder on Cal McNair for building this lousy franchise. 922-9233, Dat Boy Live says, why are we more angry at Deshaun for wanting out than the organization for the mediator for the mediocre product that is on the field, or Bill O'Brien for sabotaging the team? Deshaun was the best quarterback in Texans history. So are we more angry for Deshaun? Are we more angry about the lousy product on the field? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Fitz Roofing. Look, with this swampy weather and rains coming and going, you might find out what you didn't want to find out, and that is that your roof is going and you need something done quickly. You need a leaky roof fixed, or maybe you need a whole new roof on your house, on your business, on your commercial establishment, and you don't know who to turn to so that you don't deal with, you know, deposit thieves and storm chasers and people that just want to get your money up front and then basically don't do the work that you expect them to do, and you end up seeing them on TV, but not from a commercial. You see them being exposed for being that company that takes your money and then takes off. That's not what you deal with Fitz Roofing. You're dealing with the best in the business, and they're dedicated to Houstonians. They'll take care of you every step of the way. They got the best ratings in the business. They have the best warranties in the business. They use the best products in the business, and they do it all for you, starting with a free, no-obligation inspection that costs you absolutely nothing. Most companies out there charge you $75 to $100 bucks just to show up at your doorstep and tell you what they could do. Well, that's not going to happen with Fitz Roofing. They'll come to you and tell you exactly how they can help, cost you absolutely nothing, and there's no obligation. Check them out today. You will be very, very happy with what they can do for you, to tell you how they can help you fix a problem or prepare for one so that you don't have to deal with it later on. FITZroofing.com shows you all the services that they offer. Not only just roofing issues, they can also do home repairs. They can also put a fence in your yard. But more so than that, when it comes to roofing, they'll take care of you with that free, no-obligation inspection. 832-521-3001. Call them and set one up today. They'll take care of you every step of the way. It's Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
1970, Andy Pettit, Marshawn Lynch, Jason Witten weren't the same after taking a year or two off, and basically all professional boxers. The thing with Pettit, Lynch, Witten, those dudes were like in their late 30s and then retired and then tried to come out of retirement. Deshaun Watson's in his 20s. He's at the peak of his career whenever he left the game, much like Mike Vick. Michael Jordan was even kind of post-prime whenever he left, because he was like in his late, early 30s. And then, like, Ted Williams was peak of his baseball career. So, like, in my opinion, when you're in your 20s, whenever you're at the peak of your career, you leave for 700 days and it's not injury-related, I think you're going to get it back. Using dude in their late 30s who retired and then came back, I don't think is a very good comparison when you're looking at, will Deshaun Watson find his peak again?
No, I look, it's going to be an interesting scenario to see how it plays out. Obviously, we're all hoping for failure, except for Church and the Cleveland Browns fans. I think for me, I just question it because I think that no matter how much you're running routes with you having your buddy run routes and buddies run routes and do things, whatever he was doing to try and stay sharp while he was out all this time, that I think that everything changes when you, and I think your body relaxes to a certain point. Now, you may be right, and he might get to being a top 10 quarterback. And I think we're both on the same page. I don't see him being a top 5 quarterback, and there are 5 quarterbacks in this league that aren't going anywhere that are really, really good to where that would have been a challenge anyway. Mm-hmm. But I think that if you want to say he's going to be a top 10 quarterback again, I can't rule that out or have a hard stance to disagree with you because he has all the tools and he's capable of being that guy again. I just question, with all that he's been through mentally and the lack physically, and how he progresses as he gets older too. He did lose 2 years in terms of his heyday years. We'll see how that progresses from there. I'm just not a believer he's going to be the same guy coming back.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to hurry up and wait. Right. I don't think it's going to be this year. I think we'll see some glimpses of it.
Plus,
and
the
then
team
next
situation
year.
Makes that different too, right?
I think his team situation is actually in a decent spot, actually. I really do.
You think they could still make the playoffs?
No. I don't think the Browns can make the playoffs, but I think that where he's at with the personnel around him, I think that they're going to look good
what
offensively.
I'm saying is because
maybe
of,
not this year,
for the
but
rest
especially
of this season,
year.
It's just hopefully working out the kinks. And right. Not the kinks that off the field, but working out the kinks on the field and basically trying to get the rust off and get a chemistry with his teammates. But I think the fact that what I was talking about was, as a team knows that they're not going anywhere this year in terms of the playoffs, they're not going to make the postseason. I think that you don't get the most out of all your players. They basically start making business decisions to where you might not see the best of what he can be till next year for sure.
I mean, their offense is pretty good. Their offense is actually played better than expectations.
They're barely using Amari Cooper the way they should.
I mean, Amari Cooper's had a good year. Amari Cooper's had
a
much better year than people thought.
He could have had a much better year had he had a really good quarterback all year.
Sure. Yeah, but I mean, I don't think anybody expected their offense to be as good as it has with Jacoby Brissett at the helm. Like, they've exceeded expectations offensively. Why they've been so bad is because their defense hasn't lived up to expectations. Now, they're too far behind the eight ball, I think, to realistically make the postseason this year. They would have to, like, win out, and I don't think that team is capable of winning out, especially with the rust factor of Deshaun Watson. But I think going forward, Watson with that offensive line, with Chubb, with Amari Cooper, Njoku has been really good this season. Really good might be a bit of a stretch, but he's been good. And then they're going to add pieces too. I think that offense has a chance to be really good as soon as next season. 713-780-3776, 6267. I'm not a Texans fan, and I wish Watson bodily harm. The problem with the churches of the world is believing the women. I don't care he wasn't charged. If you've seen any of the victims talk, you know Watson is a scumbag and should never be allowed to forget it. Booing from the 700 section. It was a good NRG crowd booing Deshaun Watson. I heard some of the booing first snap of the game, introduction. I thought that the Texans fans that did go to the game, I thought that they should showed up. I really did. I appreciate the Texans fans for sitting through that game, having to watch a one-win team, having to watch a bad product, watching the team that you've been hoping would lose in this game, the Browns with Deshaun Watson. I thought the Houston crowd was good yesterday with the booing of Deshaun.
They were. And like we talked about leading up to the game last week, the ideal scenario for him to get the ultimate in terms of Texans fans being able to vent and obviously would have been the Texans having a chance to win. Would have been having a team that had a fighting chance to win that game and then basically having some kind of extra momentum with it that meant that you might fill up the whole stadium, that you might get a passionate crowd from start to finish with a full house that had a whole lot of venom and a whole lot of time to be able to unleash it throughout the game consistently at Deshaun Watson. And it was disappointing just from my perspective of knowing that as much as there was such great anticipation when the schedule came out and then the suspension came down, of knowing this was going to be the game where you could finally vent and get some payback and go at him, there was a huge letdown that the team that he was playing against wasn't. Thank God he didn't blow their doors off. Thank God he didn't play well. But I would have liked to seen a full house, and I'd have liked to seen a more competitive Texans team have a chance to take it to him.
I thought that it went pretty well. You know, the booing, You don't want to risk the number one pick of the draft, which is kind of an interesting conversation because you also have Cleveland's pick and you feel like you might be safe with the number one pick anyways. I just wanted to assure that the Texans had the number one pick, and then Watson played lousy. So I was okay with the way that the game transpired. 713-780-ESPN. On our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/ESPN975, Big C said, people of Houston that I heard on the news last night are more upset that he left than the allegation. I didn't see the news. I rarely watch the local news, local TV, except, you know, to whatever I watch Channel 2, which is often. Yeah. But I didn't hear that. But if there is more people in Houston that are more upset that he left than the allegation, then you should probably reevaluate your life choices.
I completely agree with that. And you don't have to be the parent of a daughter, but you know enough females in your life and you know enough people that you care about to have a heart to where you have to have some compassion and you have to understand if even a fraction, we always say, like, especially in what we do, the truth a lot of times in trying to decipher from press conferences to press releases to scenarios that play out in sports as it relates to their off the field and on the field, the truth lies somewhere in the middle. Okay, so maybe you don't believe all 20-some, but even if you believe one, even if you believe one for 1 minute, that's one too many. And that's one instance that shouldn't have happened, that he shouldn't have had, that he should have had more respect, more dignity, and more restraint and more of capability to treat another person the right way. And that should have been enough for you in a nutshell to have the feelings that you, the negative feelings that you should have and have generated for Deshaun Watson.
I think it's hard enough for people to see athletes themselves as real people or anybody famous. But then when you extend it from, you know, the athletes themselves to the people who they've hurt or wronged, I think that that connection is really hard. And I don't think the Watson situation is unique. I think it's really easy for people to go, no, he hurt my football team, and that's all I really care about.
Yeah. I
get how it happens. It doesn't make it right, but I get it.
I thought about this yesterday, too. Like, we had texters the other day say they're picking up Deshaun for their fantasy football team. Like, whatever. Like, it's fantasy football. It's not somebody that you're employing. It's not somebody that you have to have personal relationships with. But isn't being an NFL owner on a greater scale being an owner of a fantasy football team? Like, you own the team. Well, you're rooting for success. You're trying to win games. Now, there is the human element. There is the personal relationship. But, like, if you're a Haslam, you bring in Deshaun Watson because you want the best for your team. Like, the same way a fantasy football manager puts Deshaun Watson at quarterback because you want the best for your team.
That's so different because he does know the person.
No, I would say, exactly. That's where I would draw the line between the fantasy football and the NFL. But if you're bringing in Deshaun Watson to be the quarterback of your fantasy football team, I'm not saying that's a bad thing because you're not paying him money. It's not a relationship. You're not making him the face of your organization. That's a real tangible thing. It's fantasy football. It's fake. It's, you know, behind a computer, all of that stuff. But if you're doing it to play fantasy football, wouldn't you expect an owner to do it playing the real thing when the stakes are higher, when there's more money on the line? Like, if you're doing it in fantasy football, that's why Haslam's doing it in the NFL.
It's like Al Davis's Just Win, Baby.
Right.
And more, right? It's like, how many times have we seen how many teams that are willing to turn a blind eye to what player A has done off the field, or if they've done time, or they, you know, things have happened, but at the end of the day, does he make me a better football team? Look, this is what the knock on Bob McNair has been, was forever and a day when he was the owner of the Texans. If they had a checkered past at all, he wasn't willing to be like a lot of the owners in the NFL and say, as long as he can help me win football games, he's going to be a member of my football team. And he was the one that was going to be above it and say, nope, not here, not with the Houston Texans. We're not about that life.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. The other big news of the day, Justin Verlander is gone. Justin Verlander signing a deal with the New York Mets. New details on that contract with the Mets. If you're thinking the Astros should have matched it, maybe you might change your tone a little bit whenever you hear the final full details of it. Also, look, with Verlander leaving the Mets, this offseason is going exactly according to plan. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, I want to tell you about Doc Linville for a moment. Look, the NeoGraft procedure is not something you might be familiar with, but you should be, because especially as a guy with a lot of times you have thinning hair, you have you're balding, and you have more hair falling out on a daily basis. You don't think there's anything you can do about it, but shave your head You can try the sprays and the creams and the foams that mask it, but you know that there's going to be limited success at best. The best thing you can do is check out the NeoGraft procedure, because it's actually taking your own hair from areas that you're never going to lose it, and genetically you're never going to lose the sides and the back, and then figuring out where you need it most and having Doc Linville in the NeoGraft procedure put it where you need it. Top in the back, where you get the baboon's butt showing, your forehead has become an 8 head, you don't think you can get your hairline back. You can get all those things accomplished and taken care of with the NeoGraft procedure. And it starts with you being a loyal listener to ESPN 97.5. Go to 975hair.com. And as a loyal listener of ESPN, you can set up an appointment and get an appointment with Doc Linville's staff for free. It normally costs $150 or more. You get it for free, and you can sit down, ask all the questions, get all the answers, and see if the procedure's right for you. If it's not, walk away scot-free, costs you absolutely nothing. If it is, it could be a game-changer, a life-changer, and it can definitely give you more self-confidence on a daily basis. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by. I had the NeoGraft procedure done. I couldn't be happier. Lots of guys here at the station have had it done. They absolutely rave about the results. Be the next in line to get the NeoGraft and know that you are making a difference and you are going to be a happier person on a daily basis. Check them out today. It's 975hair.com. Go see my friend Doc Linville.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Full details of the Justin Verlander contract are out. We'll get to those in a moment. We got some things to give away. Just announced the American rock band from L.A., Red Hot Chili Peppers, are coming to Houston for their 2023 tour. Caller number 4 to 713-780-3776 wins a pair of tickets to see the Red Hot Chili Peppers at Minute Maid Park on Thursday, May 25th for this one-of-a-kind sellout show. Tickets go on sale Friday, December 9th at LiveNation.com. Got to see the Red Hot Chili Peppers December 9th at LiveNation.com. Does she?
Yeah, she's always been a...
I know where you can get tickets, LiveNation.com. They go to go on sale on Friday.
Except for the fact that, Jeremy, you know where that concert's going to be?
Minute Maid Park.
You know when?
December 9th. I just told you.
Oh, I thought you said May.
Oh, they go on sale December 9th. Yeah. They're on sale May. The concert's May 25th.
The middle of the season. You know how I feel about that.
Do you like Brian? Do you like Jose Abreu on this team? Do you want Andrew Benintendi? Do you want Wilson Contreras?
Don't do that to me now. Just don't do that to me.
For all of you people who don't like concerts at Minute Maid Park, I will ask you, do you like it when Jim Crane spends money on free agents? Just saying. Those concerts fill Crane's wallet. Crane then uses that money in his wallet to sign some big-time free agents. Didn't use it to sign Justin Verlander, though. Justin Verlander going to the New York Mets. The details of the contract are out, according to our guy, Bob Nightingale, who's always on with the Killer Bees. It is actually an $86.6 million deal
to
for
get
2 years.
To get more than Scherzer.
I think that is Scherzer. I think Scherzer got 43.3. People always just round down.
Because I remember I was always adamant that he was not only competing with, he wanted to beat Scherzer's contract.
I'm pretty sure Scherzer's.
If it was by a dollar.
No, Scherzer's 43.3. So they get the same.
Ugh.
They get the same. So, like, but they're teammates. So maybe that was by design.
Well, by the way, did you hear what I wasn't aware of and a lot of people were reporting? They weren't the best of teammates when they were in Detroit together.
Yeah.
It might get a little contentious and salty in there. Good for them.
I did hear about that. Now, I think that you can easily be a starting pitcher opposite of another starting pitcher that you might not be best friends with.
Yeah, it's every fifth day, and you don't have to sit in the corner of the dugout together.
And see everybody that Trevor Bauer's ever played for. You know what I mean?
Point.
Like, you can make it work. You can be part of the team and make it work, even if you weren't, like, seeing eye to eye. So $43.3 million for next year, for the year after, and also the vesting option here. And I think that this is where the Astros really drew the line, is that if Justin Verlander pitches 140 innings in the second year of the deal, 2024, that he gets an additional year, if he wants it, at $35 million. So the Astros had the $50 million two-year deal of Verlander, the vesting option for that second year. If he pitched 130 innings, that second year became a player option. Verlander, of course, turned down the player option to become a free agent. He has the same deal here with the Yankees, or with the Mets, where if he throws 140 innings in 2024, the third year at $35 million becomes a player option. So Verlander would then have the option to, you know, accept or reject that $35 million for 2025, which if he doesn't vest it, like if he doesn't pitch the 140 innings, then you severely overpaid for a pitcher in that second year of the deal. So best case scenario for the Mets, you're hoping that Justin Verlander allows that contract to vest, which, you know, do quick math here, 86.6 plus $35 million is the real cost of this deal. Otherwise, you're going to be losing money on it. That's $51.6 million, $51.5 million for 3 years. It's a lot of money.
It's a lot
I'm sorry,
of money.
That's way off. That's $151 million over 3 years. I'm way off. Let me start over. 86.6 plus 35, $121.5 million for 3 years, best case scenario. Best case scenario.
It's too big of a risk for a team that's too deeply taken care of pitching-wise for the next 3 years. There's no way that the Astros needed to make this deal. They should not have made this deal. And I am good with the fact that they are moving on from this deal. There are too many teams like the Mets. And let's face it, the Mets are desperate. They're competing within their own city to be the number one baseball team. And on top of that, their owner wants to compete for a World Series title in a loaded National League full of a lot of teams with a lot of good players. And oh, by the way, your best or second best, depending on how you look at it, but probably best pitcher, walked out the door to go to the Rangers. You were in panic mode. You needed this guy as much as he needed the money that he got from you, whereas the Astros weren't in a desperation situation, and they didn't need the guy the way other teams did. So you know what? You tip your cap. You send him a thank you note. You pick up the drinks after the next round of golf with Jim, if you're Jim Crane. But at the end of the day, this was smart on both sides. Kudos to JV for coming back from Tommy John surgery, proving he could not only still pitch, but proving that he was going to be worthy of getting the contract he wanted, and he got. Kudos to the Astros for being smart enough and not falling into that love relationship that you get where you say, you know what, you've meant so much to me, and you brought us World Series titles. I owe it to you to bring you back no matter what the price, and then you pigeonhole yourself in a tough situation. Kudos to the Astros, kudos to JV, and now we move forward.
Yeah, this offseason's going according to plan, in my opinion. I never believed paying Justin Verlander for what we estimated the contract to be made any sort of sense. Even if it was only the two-year deal, 43.3 AAV for 2 years I felt was too expensive. I never wanted a third year, even though that third year is, you know, almost $10 million less at 35. That's a lot of money to be paying to a pitcher who's in his 40s. I think it's natural to understand that there's going to be some regression for a pitcher entering his 40s. And oh yeah, I understand that Justin Verlander was great his last three seasons, or last season. Last year won the Cy Young, of course, won the World Series, sub-2 ERA. But this is more than likely going to be a three-year deal. Mm-hmm. Just look at the last 3 years for Justin Verlander. The latest one was outstanding, won the Cy Young. I understand that. How was he in the previous 2 years? He didn't pitch an inning in 2021, and he pitched one game in 2020. So, like, expecting, like, people are there saying, oh, well, Justin Verlander's outstanding. How do you not pick up this deal? How do you not, you know, sign Justin Verlander to a deal? Well, if you just look at the last 3 years of Justin Verlander, even though he was great in 2022, his last 3 years don't even equate the contract he just got.
Not only that, but this is the same way we were evaluating Verlander, and people just decided to put blinders on and not realize the kind of things you're saying about the fact that they forgot the fact that he didn't pitch those years. They also forgot the fact, just like in the World Series when they were saying this is a Justin, when they're looking at Justin Verlander and saying, hey, you know what his World Series record is? And you know what his World Series record and his playoff record and all these other things? They forgot that he was coming off Tommy John surgery, that he sat out two complete years, that it was like night and day comparing all these stats. But people, you know, they focus on what they want to focus on. You can focus on whatever you want, but the main focus should be thanks for the memories. Don't have hate and venom in your heart like we just got done talking about with Deshaun Watson. Don't have that same kind of attitude towards mm-hmm. Justin Verlander. He did for you exactly what he was supposed to do. You did with him exactly what everybody wanted and needed you to do. Now both sides shake hands and move forward. And the best part about this is you don't have to see him wearing a Yankee uniform or a Rangers or a Mariners uniform or some team in the American League where it hurts more because it draws up those memories of how fond you were of a guy and you automatically have to hate him because you're going to see him too much, like a Gerrit Cole. You don't have to do that with Justin Verlander. You tip your cap. You root for the best for him for his regular season. I hope he gets to 300 wins. Yeah. I hope he gets to 4,000 strikeouts. I still hope that every time he faces the Houston Astros, he falls flat on his face. Yep. But other than that, I got no negativity towards Justin Verlander.
Yeah, I like that he went to the Mets. I like that he went to the NL team. The only NL team I didn't want him to land on was the Dodgers. As long as you don't face him in the World Series, whatever. And I do hope that Verlander has that success. Just hope he never faces the Astros in the World Series.
And if he does, light him up.
Yeah, exactly. Which I would hate to see Verlander get lit up by the Astros in the World Series. Although that means Astros are lighting somebody up in the World Series. So I guess it's all right. Ocho says Michael Schwab just tweeted the Astros are eyeing Benintendi, Conforto, and Michael Brantley. He also said they want to bring back Vasquez. That's a lot going on for the Houston Astros. So like, I feel like Crane, I've already felt that Crane was operating under the idea that Verlander was gone. But now that Verlander is gone, I feel like Crane saying to every national media guy, or at least talking to every free agent, and the agents telling national media guys, we're open for business and we're going to be very active.
The interesting thing to me, one, I love the fact if they're talking to Vasquez. That must mean that there is some legitimacy, and I don't know if it was finalized or not, but the Contreras rumors where it was down to the Astros and the Cardinals, and then he started tweeting out pictures of the Cardinals or Instagramming him to where Cardinals fans thought it was a done deal. But I'd be fine if they paid a lot less and moved on from Contreras and still were able to get a Vasquez and do the same things you were willing to do to the schedule that you laid out for Contreras. The one thing that is interesting to me is when you start talking about corner outfielders, when you look at this, how does Uncle Mike fit in? Because I'm okay if Uncle Mike isn't your everyday left fielder. But I don't, and I'm great if he's coming off your bench as a utility guy that can hit, that can fill in for you, but I don't know how that relates to center field and Jake and Chaz. And I also don't understand it to the point of I'm curious what their plan is, if there's an actual plan of getting a Benintendi or getting a Conforto or getting a younger, probably more durable left fielder. Yeah. But then does that mean you're done with Michael Brantley, or do you still consider him a guy, an option for you?
I'm going to tell you what I think that the Astros are doing with all of these outfielder options. 713-780-ESPN. Also, Blank with one thing he kind of likes about Justin Verlander leaving. Will you agree? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, I don't know if you realize it or not because of the fact that it's still kind of warm out there, but it's Christmas time. It's the holidays, and you need to give her the next best thing to wearing absolutely nothing. It's the gift that keeps on giving. Soft, silky, naturally nude pajamas available only at Pajamagram. They're sensuous. They're smooth. Naturally nude pajamas feel just like her soft skin. And you give them to her, but you reap the benefits of when she wears it for you. More alluring than lingerie, the texture and touch of these pajamas, so seductive, you're both going to love the feel of them, and it leaves nothing to the imagination, which is, was pretty good from time to time. She'll love the feeling of wearing next to nothing. You'll love the way they look, and together, you guys reap the benefits this holiday season and all year long. Order them today at Pajamagram, and they'll include free matching naturally nude nightgown. That's a $75 savings on the best-selling holiday gift out there. Ordering gets you a free $75 nighty. Best of all, Pajamagram does the wrapping for you as well. Guys, you got enough going on in your life. You can take care of a gift right now that's going to take care of you. Free gift packaging on the purchase. In a year filled with the unexpected, get her something she can count on. You need to order today because last year they sold out well before Christmas. Make sure you do now. Exactly what I tell you to do. Pajamagram.com. That's pajamagram.com. Order the naturally nude pajamas and tell them Joel Blank sent you.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Justin Verlander, no longer a Houston Astro. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Michael Schwab is kind of collecting the news. Michael Schwab's a great RSS feed for the Astros. You can follow him at Twitter at Michael Schwab. But Ocho texted about what Michael Schwab is saying on Twitter. That's when you know you've made it. And when you're texting the Killer Bees about what you're saying on Twitter. Schwab saying the Astros are eyeing Benintendi, Conforto, Brantley, and he also said they want to bring back Vasquez. I haven't seen the Vasquez news, but I trust Ocho.
You know I like it.
I trust Ocho. Now, why I feel like the Astros are in the market for all of these outfielders, I think they're they're in the market to see what the best deal they get. I feel like they kind of view all these guys as kind of interchangeable, with maybe the exception of Brantley. But where they really want to get one of these guys, they're talking to all of them, you know, turning over every stone, and at the end of the day, they get one. Because I really don't think any of these guys, Kendall Conforto has played a little bit of center field, wasn't good there. I don't think they view him as a center fielder. Benintendi has played center field, hasn't done it in a while, or really wasn't good there. The Astros, I don't think, view any of those guys as center fielders. The Astros are in the market for a corner outfielder DH. They will sign one corner outfielder DH. I don't think they get two of Benintendi, Conforto, Brantley. I think they get one. They're talking to everybody to explore all of their options, but ultimately they end with just one. Now, they might get a catcher, too. I'm talking specifically outfielders.
So, I like the thought of, because I was always a little leery on Contreras and all the details financially and otherwise. And I like the fact that from a locker room standpoint, I think Vasquez is the perfect fit. He fit in here. Most guys, let's just be real, most guys that were frontline catchers for a big-time team like the Red Sox would not have taken the fact that he was traded and then had to basically play second fiddle to Maldonado for the majority, if not all of the playoffs, and be okay with it. The fact that he not only was okay with it, he was supportive of his teammates. He talked very, very positively about his time here. He loved every part of it. And the fact that when you called his number, he did not let you down. I want that dude on this team. And I don't think Maldi, and I don't think anybody that loves this team that follows him closely realizes Maldi's the long-term solution at catcher. I think Vasquez can be, as this run continues, can be your frontline catcher in a year for sure. But I think that there's nothing that says he can't be, now that you have a full season starting with spring training, for him to know all the pitching staff, to do all the things that you didn't want him to do when you traded for him, to be that guy for this team. And he's way cheaper than Contreras.
He's going to be 32.
But I still think for 3 years, you can get him and he can do what he, you know, close to what Contreras can do, but he's a better defensive catcher.
See, I value the defense behind the dish.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
I really do. I could go either way on this. And I know I'm steadily on the fence, but if you tell me that you get Christian Vasquez and maybe you spend the savings on what you have,
yes,
instead of going Wilson Contreras, to maybe elevate what you get
the
in
corner,
left field,
yes,
or maybe you're all of a sudden in business with Nimmo, who can play center field, then I'd much rather have that alternative. I could go either way with Vasquez, Contreras. Now, if you go Vasquez and we get a better outfielder versus Contreras and a lesser outfielder, give me Vasquez. The one caveat with Vasquez, though, is that he's going to want to be the everyday catcher. He wants to be number one on your catcher depth chart. So if he's going to sign with you, you're making the commitment that Martin Maldonado is now your backup. I think most of the city would be totally okay if Martin Maldonado is the backup to Christian Vasquez. I'm not sure you can sell that to the skipper that's in the dugout.
It's probably a good point, because that opinion matters, and all that matters is next season to Dusty Baker. So, you know, the same way we were talking about creative ways, and you were great about putting that out even on Twitter, a schedule of for Contreras so that it could make sense, and then he could be the everyday catcher in a year's time. I think that you'd have to look at something similar with Vasquez, but I think Vasquez also understands more so, even like we did, in terms of the load management perspective of the Astros and the fact that you know you're already going to be Javier's catcher for the most part because you were great with Javier during the season. Now, JV's not on the roster, so that's one less guy that has to have his own personal catcher. And I think that if you knew the days you were catching, if you knew there was a good chance on the days you weren't that you could DH, and you could still be in the lineup if you wanted to just hit, and you could preserve your knees, but you also knew, because of the financial backing, the years of the contract, and what the discussions told you, that in a year's time, you will be back to being the guy you want to be as the frontline catcher for this team. And you get a chance, by the way, no matter who else is looking at you, to probably have your best chance to keep winning,
mm-hmm,
on top of that. I think that could entice a Vasquez.
Yeah, I'd be okay if it's Vasquez over Contreras, especially if you're spending the savings to elevate what you get in the corner outfield, or maybe all of a sudden you become in the center field business.
Now let me ask you this, because you brought this up, and I'm curious, because you are my numbers guy, and you're the financials guy. You carry the checkbook around here when we're talking about this stuff.
You say my wallet's bigger than yours?
No, I didn't say that. I'm saying the fact that from this perspective of taking it all into consideration, does it make sense, like dollars and cents? Can you see a scenario where you could, because of the fact that you go cheaper with Vasquez than Contreras, could you see a scenario where you get another one of the younger guys in the corner, but still bring Michael Brantley back?
Yes, from an Astros perspective. No, from a Michael Brantley perspective. I don't think Michael Brantley is going to sign up to be a backup outfielder. He's going to want
to. He wants to start.
He's going to want 500 at bats. Yeah, I believe that's Michael Brantley is going to want 500 at bats. I don't believe that that's realistic. That you can sign Michael Brantley to be your backup outfielder. I don't think that that's realistic from a Michael Brantley point of view.
I was hopeful from the standpoint of I still believe in his ability to hit the baseball and hit 300 and be a really above average major league hitter. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in his ability to be an everyday outfielder. I think that regardless of how this shoulder bounces back, you've already seen it from him. He's not fleet of foot. He's not going to be the guy that, you know, has, you know, savvy and knowledge and you know, quickness to be able to cut a ball off in the gap or make the throw when you need it to be made. I love Michael Brantley, and I love the way he goes about his business, and I love him being an Astro. So I had to ask because I was kind of hopeful of the fact that, you know, much like everybody has that love for Yuli, I would love to have Michael Brantley back on this team. And I think there's a lot of scenarios right now that are playing out younger, faster, better. Is going to win out over Michael Brantley.
Yeah, like I'd rather have Benintendi than Brantley. I'd rather have the Yoshida over Brantley, to be honest with
either
you.
Either Nimmo or...
Yeah, Nimmo, Contreras.
Yeah.
From an Astros point of view, it'd be great to have Brantley as a fourth outfielder. I don't believe that Conforto. Brantley's going to be up for that. I don't know about Conforto, because Conforto's coming off a major injury as well.
Yep.
Like, and I think he's going to be pricier than Brantley. Like, if you're going to take an injury risk, I'd rather go cheaper. I'd rather go with the guy I know versus the devil I don't.
Right.
What's this one thing that you kind of like about Justin Verlander leaving that's not the obvious?
To me, it's the clubhouse. To me, we know it's a tight, close-knit clubhouse that had a grandfather clause. They had the old crotchety veteran that had to have it his way. And from undressing a pitching coach when they came out to speak to him, Justin Verlander was the guy that everybody walked around with tiptoeing around with kid gloves on because he's JV, because he's the future Hall of Famer, because he's the old guy in the room that kind of says, get off my lawn, and everybody dances off of his front lawn. I think that with him gone, you can now truly see leaders become the leaders in the clubhouse. You can see guys kind of relax a little bit more knowing that they don't have to worry about, oh, it's a game day, don't talk to JV. Oh, it's, you know, you see the Frombers of the world and the starting pitchers of the world that know that you can still have a good time and still go out and do your job. And I think you get rid of that crotchety guy in the corner of the dugout that looks pissed off a lot of times that you don't have to deal with anymore in the locker room.
Yeah, I don't put a whole lot of weight until like what everybody else thinks about that, because the Astros had the best pitching staff in all of baseball. I don't think that Verlander's like grumpiness and like get off my lawn.
You're right, though, but they accepted it because of how much he won.
Yeah, and but people also like would say good things about how Verlander would help him out and how he kind of was a little different post-injury, where he's more pleasant, pleasant post-injury. It seemed like Lance McCullers would gravitate towards him. Hunter Brown, that was his hero, and I think Justin Verlander was good for the time that they spent with Hunter Brown. Now, on game day, like I want my pitcher to be a jerk on game day, if I'm being completely honest. Roger Clemens was running stuff on his junk to get him fired up for game day. Joe Musgrove was running Icy Hot on his ears to get fired up for game day. Like, I want a pitcher like that's ready to go. That's like a raging bull on game day.
I get that, but I mean, look, and you hear about the stories with Scherzer when he was a Dodger, and the first time that Dave Roberts slapped him on the butt in between innings, and he said, "Don't ever effing do that again."
See, I like that.
I think that's old school baseball. I don't know that there's a place for it anymore. If that's you need to focus and it's all about your hyper focus, that's one thing. If you're just, you know, I think part of that is just trying to create an aura for yourself that a lot of times it's not needed in certain clubhouses. And I think that I don't ever remember a story where Verlander, it's like the quarterback that the Ben Roethlisberger type situation where you're the quarterback of now and they draft the quarterback of the future. And he says, it's not my responsibility to talk to this kid, help this kid, whatever. I didn't hear the Hunter Brown stories where as much as he looked like and threw like Justin Verlander, and Verlander was like tickled by that, I didn't hear him going out of his way to do those kind of things. And that's why I think from a greater perspective, when he wasn't around the team the whole time that they were paying him these ungodly amounts of millions of dollars, that I could understand why the team said, I don't want him throwing out the first pitch and being here now.
Yeah, it bothered him. It bothered the team in 21.
Yeah, no doubt.
That's well documented. Now, I do think it's less important in baseball, too, because baseball is a very much individual sport where it's like pitcher versus hitter.
And he's every fifth day.
And he's every fifth day. So it's not like like a Roethlisberger situation where he's losing his job to a youngster. He's not willing to train him and help them along. Now, like in other sports, I think it's very important because you have to have the chemistry. Like if it's not your backup quarterback, it's with the receivers. It's with an offensive line. If it's basketball, you want to know, like you want to be in sync with your teammates.
Well,
baseball,
like
you don't
Wilson
really need
with the
that.
Jets. You need a veteran that puts his arm around his shoulder, like Joe Flacco, and says, "Hey, kid, that's not how you handle this on the field or off. This is how you should have done it," or prepare him before he does do it. So he doesn't make a bad look even worse.
Well, every Monday at 2, it's our Mailbag Monday. You can ask the Killer Bees whatever you want to ask. 713-780-ESPN. What's your question for the Killer Bees? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.